broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip. Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my co-host and esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how a trip to the library can help you better understand Game 1 of the World Series. We're going to shed a little light on a key college football injury for tonight, and we'll talk about a coach that might get black booked right in his own town.
Let's start with first takes. And Dave, what's your first take on a Thursday in October?
Thursday in October, you think about that wonderful literary aspect of baseball. And all I could do watching last night's World Series game, we'll break down those nuances in just a couple of minutes, harken back to Roger Angel. If you haven't read much Roger Angel in the past, go do it. He wrote baseball for the New Yorker for a couple of decades. Several seminal works of collections that he put together. Start with the summer game, move on from there. Give you a little example though, of how good Roger Angel was. And this is one of my favorite quotes, anyone about any sport. And I thought about this last night watching that game. Since baseball time is measured only in outs, all you have to do is succeed utterly. Keep hitting, keep the rally alive, and you have defeated time. You remain forever young. We thought back to Roger Angel last night. But while I was watching that game, it was Kara's birthday.
It sure was last
watching.
Night. Oh, brutal. Just brutal. You know what I had to do last night, Dave? I
mean,
I
brutal, talked... just brutal. Now, that's your start. That's brutal, just brutal, and she's watching, right?
She may or may not be watching. I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that she isn't.
Well, if she was, she's not.
Well, just no, she'll be watching. I'll just, when your father gets home, I'll be getting in trouble that way. But the bottom line for me, we talked yesterday about how it was Kara's birthday, and I wasn't going to be able to watch Game 1 of the World Series. I had to go out to dinner and go to, that wasn't even the bad part of the day. The bad part of the day was, I guess I got to be honest, I'm a little bit lazy when it comes to gift shopping. A little bit, let's just say a lot. I'm a really bad gift shopper. So if you're ever looking for a good gift from me, just don't expect it's going to happen unless you tell me what you want. So Kara and I have worked out this arrangement where instead of me trying to pick something that she wants, we'll go out and shop for it together, and that'll be a part of the birthday celebration. So what did I do today, yesterday? 4 hours purse shopping, I kid you not. We went to Neiman Marcus, we went to Nordstrom's, we were in Macy's. It was a freaking disaster. I'd rather sit there and watch, over and over again, watch Cirque du Soleil 4 times in a row than deal with that purse shopping again, Dave. So that was my first take from last night. Luckily, don't have to do it again until next year.
Always had an issue on those fronts, though, and it's very difficult to translate that. And if we have some women watching, work with us on this. No purse should ever cost more than the entirety of the contents within. You were probably not running into that last night, were you?
The prices are brutal. I cannot believe what they charge for a little purse, man. It's just some leather. Yeah.
But did you at least enjoy O?
It was okay. Yeah.
It was
okay. The bottom line is if you've seen Cirque du Soleil, if you've seen two, let's say, you've seen them all. And, I've seen more than two. Wasn't as good as Love. Really enjoyed Love. But itself was, it was a cool show. If you haven't seen Cirque du Soleil, I recommend it. But the bottom line is, if you've seen Cirque du Soleil, you've seen O. It's cool. It's not that cool.
Part of the issue we've had with Cirque du Soleil shows over time is they're almost too good that you can shorten them. O, I think, is an example. You can shorten it and make it better because they do so much that over a certain time, you don't get a full appreciation of everything they're doing. It's so good, you want to shorten, which is, unfortunately, something we have not found in our mailbox yet. No one has written yet and said, your show is so good, it's too much. Maybe if you just shortened it up a little bit, it would be better. Yeah. So thanks. Apparently, we're not Cirque du Soleil yet.
Yeah. They say by about 31 minutes, they'll ask us to shorten that show. But let's start right now. Enough with the purses, enough with the Cirque du Soleil and the O. Let's start with Market Watch 4. Today's World Series game, we have a new lineup for Game 2 of the World Series. The Texas Rangers, road chalk, -120, total of 8 in tonight's contest. We have Colby Lewis going for the Rangers against Jaime Garcia for St. Louis. And Dave, we've seen a lot of money come in so far on the Texas Rangers in this ball game. Bottom line, books open this as a pick 'em. All the money so far has come on Texas.
Yeah, one of the things we're able to do at times like this, when you've got so many books open around the clock, is we saw numbers going up last night just a few minutes after game one came in. They thought pick 'em was the right range. I thought pick 'em was the right range. Go back a couple of days ago to our Jaime Garcia angle of the day, which we'll refresh when we get to money time later. He's not supposed to be a home underdog here. But what we really want to talk about, and it's not to belittle Teddy for the evening that he had, what a fascinating game that was last night. When we talk about Roger Angel and the literary aspect of it, we talk about a couple of elements. One is exactly what happened in that game, to appreciate that in and of itself, but also what we do here every day. When people try to say, why don't you win more? Why can't sports be easier to handicap? Look at last night's game as an example of what happens every day in sport. The biggest hit of the game for St. Louis, Lance Berkman, driving in a couple of runs, basically got beat on that pitch. C.J. Wilson got the ball by him. Where did that ball land off the bat? Foul territory, just a couple inches to the side of home plate. He got beat badly. He made a bad swing. But because of that swing and where the ball landed in the dirt, there was a lot of topspin on it. That's what gave that ball the impetus to get down the right field line and for those two runs to come home. One of several bounces that meant so much over the course of the game. Think about a ball hitting Nelson Cruz's ankle that saved at least one run. Managerial decision. Chris Carpenter's pitching well. We want to get him out of the game. Let's intentionally walk Nick Punto to do that. That backfires. Teddy, you missed so much while you were watching O. But again, it shows we deal with so many odd bounces inside of these games every day.
Well, no question, Dave. But the bottom line, when we talk about the luck factor in sports betting and in life in general, it's going to happen. It's going to come into play. We brought it up on yesterday's show. And luck's going to continue to be something that we're going to bring up on a consistent basis. When you're running good, you're going to win those lucky games. When you're running bad, they're a little bit harder to cash. But the bottom line, if you had a St. Louis ticket in your pocket, hey, that was a pick-em ball game. The breaks went in your favor, and you ended up cashing a winning bet on the Cardinals.
Now, what we can do when we have games isolated like this also is you can go inside the statistics, go inside the managerial decisions, and see how they get created. One of the things Ron Washington got criticized for last night by the media, and then this morning in print, the pinch hitters he chose to put up against Mark Sepchinski in the seventh inning, Craig Gentry, Esteban Germán. Said, well, why did you use those? You could have used someone else. They weren't productive. But when you're watching the game and you see what happens, look at the pitches that were thrown. This was the pitcher beating the hitters. I'm not sure it mattered who Washington sent out there. You had a pitcher who made such good pitches, which you can't see in the box scores. You can't see in these weekly statistical logs. But when the game lays out in front of you, you can get that appreciation. Ron Washington tried to say that after the game. He tried to say, we got beat. And I'm not sure how many people got that. People sitting watching, oh, certainly couldn't have. But you get one of these situations where a guy just makes wicked pitches. The hitter gets charged with a strikeout, but the hitter didn't do anything wrong.
And Zapinski is a guy who's caught me cost me a fair few tickets over the course of the years. Good to see you.
Good for us yesterday, though.
Exactly.
Good for us yesterday.
In the relief role in St. Louis, he's been good, Dave. I mean, he's been legitimately good, which is something I couldn't say for extended stretches of his tenure in Toronto.
Okay, now let's work with something to you. Okay, you come out of O, you go home, you've got a winning ticket in your pocket for the game, but you also have a series ticket in your pocket, and it's 1-0 St. Louis. When you look at the adjusted series line, is there a temptation?
There is, Dave. And the bottom line, when we talk about the recommendation we made on this show for betting on St. Louis at an underdog price in the World Series had a lot to do with the thought process about how Game 1 was going to play out. We thought that Game 1, St. Louis had an edge, and now we're in a position with the adjusted series price. We have St. Louis as a dog now. We have a position we can take, if we so choose, with Texas at a plus price now. Just after that Game 1 win, a game where the Cardinals were favored in Game 1, that speaks volumes about how the betting marketplace, and I love betting series in general, you can end up with multiple plus price tickets on both teams, Dave. It really works out that way on a consistent basis, both in baseball. You can talk about hockey. Hockey's great for this. NBA playoffs are real good for this as well, where you can get some nice plus prices on multiple teams, and you're in a no-lose situation.
Here's why we're just writing St. Louis out, though. And we'll be real quick about this. Part of the series, we thought Chris Carpenter was better coming in than C.J. Wilson. He certainly was. Even though it was a tie game when they left, Carpenter outpitched Wilson, which leads us to believe in a game five, he certainly would again. But here's where Ron Washington's decision becomes interesting. By getting Carpenter out and forcing the pinch hitter, only 87 pitches by Carpenter, maybe an outside chance we could see him again as early as game number four.
We value your feedback, and we're making it a part of every single show that we do. Please send us those emails. We got some great questions we're going to answer later in today's show. We also, of course, are going to do that every single day on air. That email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, the toll-free listener rant line is a lot of fun. Call in Craziest Rant of the Week. Goes on air every Wednesday, 866-966-4599. And, of course, get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads right now in that posting forum at covers.com. When we come back, post-mortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem. We're going to take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
We're going to start today with a coroner's inquest. When we say coroner's inquest, it means we're reaching back and re-examining a patient that has been on the table in the past to see if there are some aspects in the original diagnosis that were missed. And one of the topics we're going to use on occasion is the Senior Bowl. When we do this, we're referring to the last 4 years between these two particular programs. Why four? Because so many players go through a redshirt season and spend 5 years on campus in order to play four. So what we're doing is examining the careers of all the players involved in this week's games, all previous meetings of anyone on the current roster. So we break down Wisconsin at Michigan State, the TV game on ABC this Saturday night, major showdown. Dave, that inquest has plenty to show us.
There's a lot to see here. If you take the line on this game, extrapolate the home field advantage out, they're trying to tell you that Wisconsin would be favored by 10.5 or 11 points on a neutral field. Let's go back and look at the past four. Head-to-head, 16 quarters of football, 123 to 123, dead even. Each team wins two games. All four games close to the final possession. At no point do you think that one program is necessarily better than the other. And if you take the home field advantage out of each of those past meetings, the highest line we would have seen on a neutral field would have been about 4.5. In other words, they're jumping this game about a touchdown beyond what the perceived gap between these programs has been. Football doesn't work that way. If you go out there and consistently show that you and your opponent are even, you don't have many situations where in one season someone gets a touchdown jump. Besides, Michigan State has not fallen at all for many of those past 4 years. This is as good a Michigan State team as there's been throughout this cycle. Here's what fascinates us the most when we go back to last year's game. You will always hear people talking about games where a team lost because they had turnovers. And you adjust for that. Yeah, we were better than the other team. We turned the ball over. That's why we lost. Here's what we love, and it's very rare. Teams that win despite turnovers. Last year on this same field, Michigan State wins the game by 10 points, despite a -3 turnover differential. That's real significant. If you're even with your opponent, as Wisconsin hoped to be going in, and you're a +3 in turnovers, you have to win the game and usually win by more than a touchdown. It showed that Michigan State was the better team. Statistically, it was one-sided, and when the game was close in the fourth quarter, they pulled away with a touchdown drive of 84 yards in 15 plays, 7 minutes and 57 seconds. It was a dominant physical performance. Are we telling you we think the line is wrong this week? Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at some Carolina Panthers statistics. The first six games of the season, Cam Newton at quarterback, Ron Rivera starting out as a head coach, and after six games, boy, there's a lot to like. Newton averaging over 300 passing yards per game. D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart combining to average 5.0 per rush. Steve Smith showing life again with a quarterback that can get the ball downfield to him. 32 catches, 21.1 yards per catch. Look at the first downs. Carolina's beaten their opponents 136 to 110. Look at the total offense. Carolina has outgained their opponents by 357 yards. So we want to like the beginning of the Newton-Rivera era, and then we look at the standings. They're 1-5. What the hell happened?
Well, that's a good question, Dave. And the bottom line for Carolina, you know, here's a team that we look at and say, yeah, this team's showing signs of progress. Maybe they're actually a little bit better than we thought they were going to be. From a power rating standpoint, I've been raising Carolina's power rating number so far this season. And coming into the campaign, they were projected to be the single worst team in the NFL when it came to the over-under win totals and the preseason point spreads that were available around town here in Las Vegas. So it's a Panthers team that was supposed to be really bad, and you know what? They probably think that they are really bad. When you talk about that 1-5 record, the stats show otherwise. What we've seen from Carolina, well, we've seen them have fourth quarter leads in four of their five losses, including each of the last three. Only once in those losses have they scored in the final 12 minutes of the game, and that was a gimme touchdown, that backdoor cover against the Chicago Bears, where they took an 11-point lead and cut it right at the end of the ballgame. I think it was 4 seconds left when that touchdown came. But that's the only fourth quarter or the only score in the final 12 minutes of any of these ballgames. Meanwhile, the defense has allowed 55 points in the fourth quarter alone. The issue, you know, stats say the Panthers are on the right track, and maybe they will be, but the bottom line is this team's coming close, but not yet being able to get over the hump against some of the better teams that they faced. That's why they're in a good point spread team, not a good straight up team. And it's going to be a good question here because Ron Rivera, a first year, first time head coach, his defense hasn't been good. He comes over from a defensive side of the football in San Diego. They've had cluster injuries at linebacker. Have to see what kind of leadership Rivera brings to the table after this rough start. And of course, Cam Newton, who has made, you know, has made raise my eyebrows this year. I did not think Cam Newton would be anywhere near the quarterback that he's been. And yet Cam Newton is going to have to show some of that leadership that he's been praised for in getting Carolina over the hump and winning some of these fourth quarter ball games.
When we come back, we're going to turn the cameras around and you're going to be the star. It's email time, then a trip up to Reno, and we're going to find some casino operators who aren't so happy when the home team wins. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Man. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's start with some viewer emails. We're getting some great questions in every single day. And today we're going to start with Brian from Boston. And Brian writes, love the show and thank you for sharing your knowledge. Do you know where I can find data online for difficulty of batter's face statistics? That's something that we talked about yesterday.
And we mentioned this on yesterday's show because C.J. Wilson was dead last in the major leagues in that category this year. If you're curious, David Price for Tampa Bay, number one on top of those charts, as you would imagine, being in that division. Baseball Prospectus is the ideal source for this. It's baseballprospectus.com. They set it up so that you can isolate it by whatever innings count you want. You can go in and actually manipulate their database a little bit. An invaluable source for someone who plans to be betting baseball day in and day out, like watchers of this show will be. Next question, and this is from Topper Chris. How hard is it to make a living as a sports bettor? How do you get started? Good, you get to feel that.
Yeah, and that's a good question, but a tough question. How hard is it to make a living as a sports bettor? How many people do you think make a living as a sports bettor in the world, Dave? 10,000 maybe, over under? You think that's a decent number?
You were shopping at some pretty pricey stores last night, so we know at least one.
The bottom line is there are not that many. You know, there are certainly some here in Nevada. There are some spread out, of course, the United States. There's some around the world, but it's a relatively small cohort of people that are able to make a full-time living off of their sports betting habit, shall we call it, a hobby? Not a hobby. Obviously, it takes a ton of work. How did I get involved? Well, I started out on the other side of the counter. I was a, and I suppose I can say this on air, I was a bookie back in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I went to school at Michigan. I graduated, and I got involved on the other side of the counter. I didn't really make a bet growing up. I didn't make a bet in college. I didn't make a single bet until after I graduated, and we started laying off when we got heavy action on one side of a ballgame, me and my partner. But the bottom line is I came out to Vegas in 98. I had a real bankroll of modest five figures. I also had what I called a virtual bankroll, which was coming in with credit cards that I had signed up for the previous year. Didn't charge them all up, but I did charge a fair few of them up. Not a method I would recommend for those of you thinking about moving to Las Vegas, the running up the credit cards and, oh, well, if I go bust, I'll just declare bankruptcy or something. It's a nice theory. It's a real pain in the ass if you try to do it. And I remember one game. It was a Monday night football game between the Falcons and Steelers. And literally, it was, I think, my second year out here. And that was my all-in game. Had Atlanta not been able to cover, though, I think it was plus 6.5 that night, you wouldn't be seeing me right now because that was literally my all-in game. And you don't like to have those type of scenarios, especially early in your tenure as a professional sports bettor. Dave?
Yeah. Let's make sure that when we deal with this question, we're answering directly the way it was asked. How do you make a living as a professional sports bettor, not how do you win? Every day we're going to talk about how you can actually win, and it's a whole different topic between winning and being able to win enough to make your living this way. So we'll deal with this day in and day out. One of my favorites, though, and we heard this maybe too many times at banquets from Len Banker, it's a great story. He starts it this way. Okay, guys, I'm going to tell you how to make $1 million as a sports bettor. Okay, first thing, get $1 million. And that's it. He delivers that so much better than I do because he also had so much experience. We heard that at a lot of banquets.
Here's one more question we should go through today. And I forgot who it's from. Let me go back and check
from
that.
Richard.
This is from Richard. Richard says, you guys probably could not help but have heard about the Colin Coward comments about his picks impacting the Las Vegas line. Is there anything really going on with Coward and the Talking Heads influencing point spreads?
No. But understand why Colin Coward was doing this. And I think this is where some people have misinterpreted. They thought that it was some sort of a sign of arrogance. Look at me. I pick these games that influence the point spread. Well, every day we work on setting odds. And here's what I believe. Colin Coward probably, on his public statements, probably believes about 60 to 65% of what he says. But he's got to go beyond that. He's got to fill 3 hours every morning. He has to be entertaining. What he's got to be able to do is say things that will incite and provoke responses. That's exactly what he did this week. The fact that we're talking about it means that he actually did a good job there. So I think he's good at what he does. He knows how to create responses. But that doesn't mean that he believes what he's saying. I think this is one of those instances.
And it's very important to note that if you're getting sports betting information from talking heads, whether it's on ESPN or any of the other four-letter networks, they are not people who are responsible for their picks. Their job is to draw ratings. Their job is to make money for the network and to generate advertising revenue. That's not picking winning plays. That's generating controversy. Colin Coward's very good at that. As a sports bettor, not so much. If you want quality sports betting information, you've come to the right place. And that also means, Dave, that we're going to continue to answer those emails and questions. Go right now to the covers.com posting forum, covers.com/posting forum. Get involved in the community. We're going to answer posting forum questions tomorrow. And, of course, that email address one more time, sportsday@covers.com. And I also want to talk about the contest excitement that's going on today because serious excitement. We have a user by the name of Jacoby who has picked 20 consecutive games correctly, either against the spread or over-unders. Now, win number 21 equals a massive cash prize of $25,000. Not only that, a win would put Jacoby just four games away from the grand prize of $100,000 for nothing, Dave, $100,000 for nothing. Of course, you can get involved in the Covers Contest, contest.covers.com, and you too can be playing for $25,000, even $100,000, if you can get on a nice streak. So kudos to Jacoby. Good luck tonight. Bring home the 25K. Now, it's time to go inside the numbers.
Maybe we can help him to find that next winner. In most towns, usually merchants are happy when the home team wins. Fans celebrate, they spend money. Reno, Nevada is a little bit different. Vegas would be the same as Reno, but the home team never wins, so this issue doesn't come up. Chris Ault has been a college football coach that we focus on a lot. We're always looking for how coaches perform as favorites, because when you're favored, and of course the higher the line goes, the more control you have some say in the outcome. You're better than the other team. You can control the flow a little bit. Chris Ault has been very dynamic in this role of a favorite, much to the chagrin, of course, of casinos and sportsbooks in Reno, where it's not that far of a stroll from the stadium to be able to make a bet. So let's go inside the numbers, and let's take a look at just what that jeopardy has been from some of these properties in Reno. Chris Ault is in his second tour of duty as a Nevada head coach. In this second tour, he's been a home favorite 29 times, 23-6 against the point spread. That's not necessarily good for the sports books. You're going to find him, by the way, in that role this week against Fresno State on Saturday.
When we come back, the news you need to know and our insider six-pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's start right now with our Insider Six Pack. Six tidbits of insider knowledge for the upcoming football weekend. We're going to start tonight in Birmingham, Alabama, where the UAB Blazers got a little bit of bad news today in their home game versus Central Florida. It looks like lead running back Pat Shedd, someone who was projected as potentially a sixth or seventh round NFL draft choice, which UAB doesn't have a whole lot of, doesn't look like Pat Shedd is going to be able to suit up for the Blazers at the running back position tonight. They just don't have much depth at the position. Jonathan Perry, number two on the team in carries, but he's only managed 2.7 yards per attempt. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on that UAB passing game. They just threw their first two touchdown passes of the season last week. It's been 224 attempts this year, only two TDs for the Blazers passing game. Clearly, without Pat Shedd, UAB is going to cover this number. They're probably going to have to make some plays on the defense side of the football, something they've been able to do so far this season. Half the Blazers' touchdowns in 2011 have come on defense or special teams.
LSU began their 2011 season with key suspensions, and at the midway point, here come more. Top running back Spencer Ware, 512 yards and six touchdowns. You're not going to see him this week. We don't know when next. And a couple of defensive backs, including Tyrann Mathieu, who is on his way to being a first-team All-American. Even though he's just a starting cornerback, he'd already scored two touchdowns this year and almost had a third. He got tackled at the one-yard line against West Virginia on an interception return. And also Thurold Smith, who's been in the rotation at corner. He's only had one start, played a lot in their nickel coverages. All three are suspended, at least for this week, but let's say possibly indefinitely. They don't want to make an official statement. There are rumors circulating, though, from good sources that it may have been the failure of a drug test.
Yesterday, we told you why Ronnie Brown was going to have an impact for the Detroit Lions. Well, so much for that. In the immortal words of Tom Waits, the large print giveth and the small print taketh away. The Philadelphia Eagles, after an injury to Jerome Harrison, decided we're going to nix the trade. So Ronnie Brown will not be in Detroit this weekend, and that leaves some issues for the Lions at the running back position. Javid Best still hasn't practiced, or didn't practice yesterday, and he may not go this week. He's had repeated issues with concussions in the past. The Lions need to be conservative in putting Javid Best on the field. They did add James Davis to the practice squad yesterday, but Davis won't hit the Lions' regular roster unless one of the other running backs is either declared out for the season or cut or something like that. So issues in Detroit at running back.
The large print giveth and the small print taketh away. Okay, first three guys who can get that reference. Tom Waits has a new CD coming out in a couple of weeks. First three guys who can get that reference, you're going to get a free copy from us, but no Googling. We have our ways of finding out. If you get it on your own, you win. No Googling. A little bit of an awkward home field in Miami this week. We talked earlier in the week about how difficult it was for Miami to maintain any sort of a crowd when you've got a lame duck head coach and a lame duck quarterback. Now, here comes the problem. They're reporting over 10,000 secondary tickets have been sold for this week's game against Denver since it was announced that Tim Tebow would be the starting quarterback for the Broncos. That's really problematic because your season ticket holders are already showing up to boo Sperano. Now, you're actually going to have a lot of fans coming dressed in Bronco orange, rooting for the other side. If you factor home field advantage into your power ratings much, lower it this week for the crowd aspect. And also note, while we usually adjust against teams traveling across time zones to the east, not the other way, but to the east, that adjustment not as important this week because Denver is coming off of a bye.
And, of course, it's worth noting, if you do separate home field power ratings for every team in the NFL, like I do, the Miami Dolphins probably already have the single lowest home field advantage in the National Football League. So for this week's game, I've got Miami's home field as 1 point, which is about as low as it's going to get. Let's talk about Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford did not practice yesterday, potentially a sign of concern for St. Louis. Well, not so much. We found some information that looks like he's being given a full day off so his ankle can heal a little bit faster. And let's talk about how Bradford wants to play this particular game against Dallas in a big way. Here's the quote from Sam Bradford. Quote, "I've had this Dallas game circled for a while now, knowing that it's about as close to home as I get. It'd mean a lot for me to play down there, so hopefully it'll be ready. I would hate to get tickets for people to watch me stand on the sideline." So Sam Bradford efforting to get into action this week. Of course, for St. Louis, we talked yesterday about the signing of Brandon Lloyd at the wide receiver position, or the trade for Brandon Lloyd at the wide receiver position. It looks also like the Rams could get Mark Clayton in the rotation this week. He's been out all season long, but here's the key with Clayton. It's not going to be his status on Friday that's going to give us an inkling that he's going to play on the other side from Lloyd this week, but whether we see the Rams drop someone off their roster, which they'll have to do to take Clayton off the PUP list, the physically unable to prepare list. So watch and see what St. Louis does at the wide receiver position on Friday. Give you a good inclination as to whether Clayton is going to play. And believe me, a Rams wide receiver core with Mark Clayton and Brandon Lloyd is going to be a heck of a lot better than anything they brought to the table so far this season.
Let's go out to Oakland. We got a couple of emails asking about Carson Palmer, not so much from a point spread standpoint, but from a fantasy football standpoint. Will he get the start this week? Let's go right to offensive coordinator Al Saunders. He said this to a Kansas City radio station yesterday. As long as he's breathing, how do you feel if you're Kyle Bowler? You know, and you've already been told, if Carson Palmer can breathe on Sunday, he'll play. Palmer did practice yesterday. He split the snaps with Bowler with the first team, but Jacoby Ford, Darius Haywood-Bey, they stayed after practice, got in some extra work with Palmer. If you need a quarterback for your fantasy team, it looks like he probably will get the start this week if you've got an option to add him in there.
Yeah, I watched Bowler last week overthrow, I believe it was Darius Haywood-Bey, and Bay kind of looked at the quarterback and said, he's just a backup, and ran back to the huddle. Definitely Carson Palmer, probably the better choice. We'll see in the short term if it works as well as Oakland as it may well in the long term. When we come back, we're going to put all of this information to work for you. It's money time.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from,
can't think of the name on my damn show,
Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
It's money time! to Tucson, where the Arizona Wildcats are facing the UCLA Bruins. Tonight's TV matchup, right now the number, Arizona -4.5, over under 61.5. That's right, we're talking an Arizona team that just fired their head coach, and that's 0-10 straight up in their last 10 games against FBS opponents. Well, they're laying 4.5 tonight. What do we got, Dave?
Rick Neuheisel getting about the same respect as Kyle Bowler over the last 24 hours. Yeah, this is a fascinating scenario we have coming in. We were surprised about the timing of the Mike Stoops hiring. Not surprised that he was fired. You could see that coming. There was getting to be a little bit of a rift between the players and Stoops. Here was the issue. These Thursday night television games are usually showcases for your program. You don't get many of them. You want to put the best light that you can out there. So what have they invited the ESPN announcers to do? To come on the air talking about Stoops getting fired, about that losing streak that Teddy just referenced to. This was an odd timing move by Arizona, which makes us wonder, are things worse than perhaps they even appear to be if you make that drastic of a move at this particular time?
Well, how bad are things in UCLA right now? I mean, Neuheisel's every bit as much on the hot seat, maybe more so than Stoops was. He just hasn't been fired yet. And when you see quotes like this from Rick Neuheisel, really concerns me, because obviously the biggest issue, the single biggest issue for UCLA this year, last year, the year before, they just haven't gotten good quarterback play at any point during the Rick Neuheisel era. Of course, Richard Braithwaite now gone. Kevin Prince going to be the starter tonight. And here's a quote from Neuheisel. Quote, you can protect the quarterback some with your play calling. The fact that they get tackled can't be a hindrance to what we do and our play calling. So it sounds like UCLA likely to go through a fairly conservative game plan tonight, which means that over 61.5, that may be a little bit high if the Bruins aren't going to throw a lot, Dave, isn't it?
I think it is high. And the reason Neuheisel made that comment, Prince has been battling injuries through his whole career. He has not been able to stay healthy consistently. That matters. If he's healthy, there are some weapons here. They've got some running backs who could eat time against the middle of this Arizona defensive front and work the chains. Rosario, one of the most physical wide receivers in all of college football, he can be a load on the outside. They just haven't had a quarterback to execute the plays to make it happen against what's been a weak Arizona defense. But I'll tell you where this game may come down to. And it certainly can impact the total as well as the side, because I think the total and side are both high. Arizona special teams. They've just been a disaster. And that really can matter in a close game. They're only 14 for 19 on extra point attempts. That's about as bad as you're ever going to see. The stats will show 2 out of 6 on field goal attempts. It's really 2 out of 7. They had a botched snap that also came into play. One of the key plays in their loss to Oregon State in the last game. A blocked kick, run back for a touchdown. Because of that, we're thinking UCLA and under in some form. Not big plays. If at +6 would be the buy point with UCLA. But this total hovering in the low 60s, not only conservative from UCLA, but, okay, Tim Kish, Arizona coach, formerly the defensive coordinator, sort of in the shadow of Mike Stoops. It was a defense-first guy. If you're Kish, you're a defensive coordinator, and you're showcasing yourself tonight, because you're probably not going to get this head coaching job, don't you want your defense to come to the forefront?
Well, you probably would. The problem, of course, is that the Arizona defense has allowed 27 points in each of the last 3 ball games. Now, some of that may have to do with the quality of opposition that they faced. They faced, in the course of the last month, they faced Oklahoma State's offense and Stanford's offense and Oregon's offense. Last time out, they faced Oregon State. And, yeah, a part of that 27 points allowed was the block punt return for a TD that you just mentioned, Dave. But the bottom line for Kish, that his defense has not yet performed particularly well.
Yeah, just one quick adjustment. That's 27 points in the first half of the last 3 games. That's how bad they've been. So they've got some adjusting that they're going to have to do. Now let's go back to St. Louis. It's time for game 2 of the World Series. Game 1 worked out well for us, both from a series standpoint and from a straight-up standpoint. At the top of the show, we talked about the surprising market activity. They opened a game pick'em last night. It's not pick'em anymore. Teddy, the market's like Texas. Do you?
You know, I'm not in love with the Rangers in tonight's ballgame. I think that when it comes down to it, we talked about Jaime Garcia yesterday. Here's a pitcher with an extraordinary track record pitching at Busch Stadium. And that can't be ignored in tonight's number. And we also need to talk, however, about the success that Colby Lewis has had for the Rangers. And I think some of the money coming in on Texas is really supporting Colby Lewis, because he has been a legitimate big-game pitcher for Ron Washington both last year and this. His numbers in the postseason, in Texas postseason run last year. Very, very strong. Again, this year, in a key game at Tampa Bay on the road, threw six innings of one-hit ball. So we're talking about Colby Lewis, who's now had six postseason starts over the last 2 years with an ERA under three. And I think that, at least partially, is driving some of the support for the Texas Rangers tonight.
We'll take a little different track. As we set up what we think we'd like to do with this game tonight, yesterday the total closed at 7.5. Tonight there's an 8. They're telling you, okay, there's a bit of a drop down from Carpenter Garcia, from Wilson to Lewis. But take a look inside the numbers a little bit. That may not be the case. We broke down Garcia for you and inside the numbers earlier in the week, but let's put him in front of you again. Home, 2.37 ERA in his career. On the road, a 4.28, almost a 2-4 run gap. He's very comfortable with this mound. Colby Lewis on the road this year, 10-6 with a 3.46. At home, just 5-5 with a 5.54. Combine those two and look at how good these closers have been. Jason Mott just having an incredible postseason that was difficult to see coming. He's up to 9 full innings now. No runs, 1 hit, no walks, 7 strikeouts. The runs may be tough to come by again because you know what? While you were watching O, you were not hearing the crack of the bat very loud interrupt you. There were not many hard-hit balls.
And there was a lot of talk after the game last night. Again, I didn't watch the game, but I certainly got involved with the post-game articles, and that's what we do when we come home after a birthday night with the Honey Bunny. We sit down at the computer.
Oh, Honey Bunny.
Yeah, well, you know. I had to
Honey Bunny.
Still,
oh, that's...
If she's still watching the show and hasn't filed papers yet, then we have to give her some credit here. But the bottom line is that, you know, you get home for the night. What it takes to be a professional sports bettor, you get home. Instead of getting into bed with your better half, you sit down at the computer for a couple hours. And that's what it takes to be a pro bettor. But the bottom line of four last night was that both managers, both teams really talking about the NL style of play, where you're trying to grind out runs, where you're bunting runners over, where you're doing a lot of the little nuances that you don't always see in AL baseball. And, of course, the NL tends to have lower scoring games as a result. And anytime you're betting baseball totals, doesn't matter if it's the middle of summer, doesn't matter if it's the first day of April, doesn't matter if it's here in October, key is the bullpens. Lines get set by the starters, but you have to handicap the bullpens. Good bullpens beget unders, bad bullpens beget overs. And the reason these two teams are in the World Series right now is because both of them have gotten extraordinary, really exceptional bullpen play throughout the course of their postseason run.
And we're getting ready to set up the play of the day, which you can probably see coming. We don't have a Tom Waits winner. Brian Leonard, wrong. Good attempt, didn't get it. No one was able to step right up and win that free CD. Let's start the drum roll.
Drum roll, please. The play of the day for Thursday's show. We're going to go with the Texas and St. Louis under the total. Rangers and Cardinals under 8. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Thursday. And, of course, that's going to wrap it up for today's edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Thanks for watching. We'll do it again tomorrow.